You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
In lighting the chalice this morning, let this flame be a symbol of the warmth and light of this beloved and loving community, and this flame a beacon to guide us along our individual journeys in the coming weeks, and this morning a symbol of the convergence of our paths in shared fellowship. May the glow from this candle help us to reflect on weeks past and light the way for us all along future pathways. And may this light be a beacon to beckon us all on to new possibilities. Amen.
As far as we know, only sapiens can talk about entire kinds of entities that they have never seen, touched, or smelled. Legends, myths, gods, and religions appeared for the first time with the cognitive revolution. Many animals and human species could previously say, "Careful, a lion." Thanks to the cognitive revolution, Homo sapiens acquired the ability to say, "The lion is the guardian of the spirit of our tribe." This ability to speak about fictions is the most unique feature of sapiens language. It's relatively easy to agree that only Homo sapiens can speak about things that don't really exist and believe six impossible things before breakfast. You could never convince a monkey to give you a banana by promising him limitless bananas after death in monkey heaven. But why is it important? After all, fiction can be dangerously misleading or distracting. People who go to the forest looking for fairies and unicorns would seem to have less chance of survival than people who go looking for mushrooms and deer. And if you spend hours praying to non-existent guardian spirits, aren't you wasting precious time? Time better spent foraging, fighting, and fornicating. But fiction has enabled us not merely to imagine things, but to do so collectively. We can weave common myths, such as the biblical creation story, the Dreamtime myths of Aboriginal Australians, and the nationalist myths of modern states. Such myths give sapiens the unprecedented ability to cooperate flexibly in large numbers. Ants and bees can also work together in huge numbers, but they do so in a very rigid manner and only with close relatives. Wolves and chimpanzees cooperate far more flexibly than ants, but they can do so only with small numbers of other individuals that they know intimately. Sapiens can cooperate in extremely flexible ways with countless numbers of strangers. That's why sapiens rule the world, whereas ants eat our leftovers and chimps are locked up in zoos and research laboratories. Telling effective stories is not easy. The difficulty lies not in telling the story, but in convincing everyone else to believe it. Much of history revolves around this question. How does one convince millions of people to believe particular stories about gods or nations or limited liability companies. Yet, when it succeeds, it gives Sapiens immense power because it enables millions of strangers to cooperate and work towards common goals. Just try to imagine how difficult it would have been to create states or churches or legal systems if we could only speak about things that really exist, such as rivers, trees, and lions.
Thank you, Daphne. Well, I thought I'd stir you up with that one. An exciting young historian, Yuval Noah Harari, a graduate of Oxford, I think, in history, professor of history, now in Haifa. And he has encapsulated, I guess, a lot of where many people are at the present time and haven't quite yet articulated it. So I would recommend the book. It's a great read. So we're looking today especially at the power of the myth in attempting to regulate and control human, or sapiens, impact on the natural world. All post-industrial political systems, including communism and theocracies, religious-based political systems, have been equally complicit in their destructive impact on the natural world. The only humans that eventually got the balance right were traditional hunting and gathering economies. Here in Australia, through the shared beliefs of the Dreamtime of our Aboriginal people, but not before their use of fire in hunting had helped to destroy all the megafauna that had occupied our vast grasslands, now substantially desert. The giant short-faced kangaroo, which you can see there, the marsupial pouched lion, with what they suggest is the most powerful bite ever recorded in a marsupial. And of course the giant wombat that you can see in the South Australian Museum, one of the best skeletons available of Diprotodon. To name just a few, sapiens are a destructive lot. Sapiens is a bit of a misnomer. Unsapiens would be a more appropriate description. This uncertainty has been caused by political systems and religious beliefs that are a product of corporate and individual greed within a capitalist, market-driven economic system. In the 1987 movie Wall Street, Gordon Gekko famously said in his speech to investors, "Greed is good." We are now reaping the consequences of that greed, and we, sapiens, we'll soon need to turn our current economic system on its head and rewrite economic theory if we're to save the planet and ourselves. If we continue along our present path, we will cause more mass extinction of species, including ultimately us. Mass extinctions that we show spiritual and political apathy towards even now. The myth of rampant consumerism and its bedfellow conspicuous consumption have displaced ancient wisdoms as the dominant belief system today. It spread to a growing middle class in Asia, wherever there are cashed-up consumers. The urge is to show others that you've made it. Some people are so affluent that they can afford to spend $140 on a single bottle of water. Specially branded, of course. The principal driver of human conflict today is not religion, but global and regional inequality, and it's getting worse. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. I'm sure you've heard that before. Nations in other regions also want a bigger slice of the wealth, and the standard of living that Australians have enjoyed, they want to have a share in that. In a world of finite resources, many Australians will need to expect less. That we still demand more is the reason why many are drifting to the lunatic right wing of the political spectrum. We now need to tell a different, less anthropocentric, human-centred, and much more earth-centred or Gaia-centred story. There are limits to economic growth, and we humans must urgently return a fully sustainable equilibrium to the planet in the interests of our own survival. Yuval Noah Harari asks, how did we, Homo sapiens, manage to cross this critical threshold, eventually founding cities comprising tens of thousands of inhabitants and empires ruling millions? The secret was the story, the fiction. Large numbers of strangers can cooperate successfully by believing in common myths, that is, myths they share. The key word here is common. For the purpose of human cooperation, the issue isn't whether people believe true things or good things, but whether enough of them believe the same things. Shared beliefs. Historically, human beings achieved large-scale cooperation through shared and commonly believed stories via religions, folklore, and eventually through political systems, ideologies, and laws. And that's very briefly how and why we managed to dominate the Earth. To the extent that we have reached the Anthropocene, as it's called, the human era, to the detriment of the natural world that supports us. So much so that the human plague may now be terminal for the planet and for us. So what are these powerful myths? As the reading would suggest, the myth of religion. Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Shintoism, Taoism, Unitarianism, and recently consumerism, or whatever yours is. This, of course, doesn't negate or devalue the human truths and wisdoms that are inherent in all religions. Just because I use the word mythology, it's not a put-down, because these gave us enormous truths that are still with us today. Some of the stories were fictitious. Storytellers embellished these stories in order to entrench belief as faith. Humans sharing in the mythology of one religion or another have all helped sapiens survive and more or less thrive to where we are today. Human population has risen to plague proportions, even though conflicts fought under the banners of one religion or another have killed many millions. And there are also these other myths, which we'll come to. The myth of the divine right of kings. We don't believe that anymore. It was created, of course, by the unholy alliance between the early Christian church and the Roman Empire. So that carried through to most monarchies. The church scratched the back of the monarch, and the monarch in return gave the church special recognition and favour. So a symbiotic relationship, if you like. In England, of course, Charles I in 1629 decided to rule entirely without Parliament, and that led to the Civil War of 1642, and of course the conflict between Charles I, the Royalists, and the Roundheads led by Oliver Cromwell. 147 years later, in France, King Louis XVI continued to live extravagantly after he had suspended Parliament for over a decade. He had bankrupted France with empire building. He had helped the Americans fight their war of independence against the hated British. And the country was just stony broke and people were beginning to suffer. This old mythology disappeared overnight in France. It took a single sudden revolution in 1789, spearheaded not by the peasants, but actually by affluent lawyers, despite the folklore. The great historical battles for democracy continue in France and elsewhere within the Western civilization, where endemic corruption remains well hidden compared with the openness of corruption in developing countries. The battle for democracy is centred on the shift in power from the legislature, the lawmakers, the parliament, voted by us, shifted to the executive, the prime minister and cabinet. And people are getting pretty cheesed off. The executive is now eclipsing the legislature as the most important of the three arms of government in democracies such as USA, Britain, France, Canada, and Australia, where executive powers are being pushed beyond their constitutional limits, aided and abetted by a judiciary whose judges may have been appointed by the executive on the basis that they will acquiesce. A legislature which is truly representative still exists in theory, but in practice it's been replaced by executive power, influenced by or in the pay of powerful moneyed corporate lobbyists and individuals at the big end of town who have far more say in government policy than us ordinary citizens. There is a reluctance to disclose political donations. You will recall the recent riots between the yellow vests in France against the French government. This was a demonstration by students and other citizens against the growth of executive power at the expense of Parliament. Then we come to the mythology of economic theory, growing out of the ideas of Adam Smith, John Stuart Mill, and John Maynard Keynes. The shared myth of money, where would we be without it? And yet, really, when you look at it, it's just a bit of plastic or a bit of metal. And of course, if we didn't have it, we would be forced into the inconvenience of a bartering system. Imagine having to take something of equal worth to a car if we had to buy a car. We now find that the myths of money, wealth, and rampant capitalism are in conflict with the mythology of environmental sustainability. As we learn more about the interdependence between sapiens and the natural world, this is in turn supported by the mythology of science, as humans attempt to explain global events such as global warming in a rational way, recognising that in a finite planet there are limits to our growth. Today I'll focus on the looming conflict for us all, and within each of us, between the competing mythologies of capitalism and environmental sustainability, and the need for new perspectives on each if we're to survive as a species. To resolve the standoff between capitalism and environmental sciences, we need new wisdoms, new insights, new stories, informed by our best and still evolving science. Because I also regard science as part of our mythology. We also need to temper such stories with the humility to recognise that our science is always uncertain, because we don't even begin to understand the most basic physical particles or subatomic particles. Heisenberg, that today's science may become tomorrow's superseded mythology. In my lifetime, I've already seen Newtonian physics somewhat superseded by the new scientific methodology of quantum physics, and such cosmic mysteries as string theory, parallel universes, particle physics, quarks, leptons, gravitons, bosons such as Higgs boson, the so-called God particle because it defines gravity, and fermions, all still fairly hypothetical but with a growing body of evidence from the CERN laboratories using the Large Hadron Collider. So sufficient evidence to form part of our current scientific methodology, but we need to temper that enthusiasm with the humility to realise in 100 years' time it may all be regarded as very old hat and superseded. Old stories of human death, resurrection and eternal life for the faithful and our special right to plunder the planet were developed at a time when the Earth's bounty seemed unlimited. While these stories may have assuaged selfish fears of our own mortality, they failed to consider the natural world and the intricate interrelationships and interdependence of all living things, and that species at the top of the food chain will perish if those lower in the food chain are destroyed. We need a story now that articulates fully with our best science if we sapiens are to survive. We need a narrative that will protect this unspoilt coral reef that you can see here, or a rainforest, or closer to home, our very diverse, perhaps less spectacular until you get into it, our undervalued mallee woodland. Don't knock it, it's beautiful. A new greener mythology might start with this story. Chief Seattle was reported as once saying, "How can you buy or sell the sky? The warmth of the land." The idea is strange to us. If we do not own the freshness of the air and the sparkle of the water, how can you buy them? Mankind did not weave the web of life. We are but one strand within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. This was misattributed to Chief Seattle. The real story, it's a meme actually, the real story is a little less romantic. They were written by Ted Perry, a screenwriter for Home, a 1972 film about ecology. Those words have since been quoted widely in books, on TV, even from the pulpit. A children's book sold 280,000 copies within 6 months of its 1991 issue. Now, by most accounts, Chief Seattle was a great speaker and a skilled diplomat, particularly in his native tongue. The Squamish people were plain speakers when they had to resort to English, especially when they were being forced to hand over their land and hunting grounds to white settler invaders. He did give a speech, but he never said the earth is our mother. He said this, this is just a small portion. At night when the streets of your cities and villages shall be silent and you think them deserted, they will throng with the returning hosts that once filled and still loved this beautiful land. The white man will never be alone. Let him be just and deal kindly with my people. The dead are not altogether powerless. There will always be a lot more for us to learn, and new stories are not to be taken as absolute truths, but new understandings about sustainable living, not God-given and immutable, based on science and reason, our truths. And because they're ours, with the flexibility to modify and add to them, if and when we need to. But a new environmentalism will require the death of rampant capitalism and its bedfellow materialism as we know it. We've seen the collapse of communism. I firmly believe we can't go on as we are. Capitalism will need to be modified substantially. The opposite to material is spiritual. Less materialism is more spirituality. Ask any nature lover. There's a lot of joy out there that's not wrapped up in material possessions. Materialism and rampant consumerism is superseding traditional religious belief. There has been a rapid shift away from a shared morality and the old universally held truths towards inequality, competition, materialism, spiritual disconnection, and a sense of entitlement. Tax is disproportionately paid by pay-as-you-go employees on middle incomes. Many of the wealthy don't pay any tax. They prefer to employ an army of lawyers to fight their battles with the ATO. Governments seeking to redistribute wealth more fairly get the big end of town offside because the money's going to come from them. Did you watch the recent Four Corners on the Financial Services Royal Commission? Both major political parties were complicit in trying to head off the Financial Services Royal Commission, and it was only the crossbench that ensured that it went ahead. Again, the big end of town. I always thought bank robbery was when somebody burst into a bank brandishing a shotgun. But no, it was the banks that were doing the robbing all along, far more than it was ever done by criminals and guns. In devising new shared myths and stories, we should not ignore past wisdoms. Although shared myths have served us well, they also include old and powerful parables about good stewardship and care for the environment that have gone unheeded. It's ironic to me that the remaining bit of Christianity that has really been embraced by society and everyone recognises is Christmas. Not the celebration of the birth of the Christ child, but the really successful commercial aspects of Christmas. Father Christmas bearing gifts, and of course it sucks the kids into materialism, consumerism, and then a few days ago we've celebrated St. Valentine's Day, a beautiful fiction. St. Valentine was never a lover or a patron of love. If you read the story, you'll realise it's just a capitalist story that encourages us to spend more. These commercial remnants of Christianity are great for the economy. Billions are spent in the Christmas splurge, and so on. Perhaps we might learn to bring our children gifts in the form of living, transpiring seedlings, trees, for them to plant, rather than plastic trees to put the prezzies under at Christmas time. or to buy them drought-tolerant ground cover plants instead of plastic lawn, which will sure as eggs end up in the food chain sooner or later. And what fun it might be planting native indigenous plants in our gardens, watering them and watching them grow. In fact, you don't have to water them anywhere near as much. We must be more energetic in heading off the rampant consumerism being indoctrinated into our children. And it's on all the stories we tell them, and of course the TV is full of it. The major news story for me this summer is that our planet Earth, our Gaia, is angry. We are experiencing the wrath of an angry planet with irrevocable and accelerated species loss, where environmental systems are dying all around us. Expect Adelaide to reach temperatures of 50 degrees sometime soon. 47.7 at Kent Town just a week or so ago. And yet we still entertain the fiction that our children and our grandchildren will live to be centenarians, perhaps never getting old. Plastic and other pollution is entering our food chain. It contaminates our food, leads to illness, autoimmune disorders are rife, and genetic mutations. Microplastics are in our soil, in our water, and in the food we eat. What about global warming? Our atmosphere is energised by global warming, heat being energy. Our sun, gentle amongst other stars, is actually cooling very slowly over the period in which the Earth is getting rapidly warmer. Do you notice how the climate deniers are strangely silent during the summer months? Only to start up again once winter comes in cold and furious. You see, heat is energy. Energy energizes the atmosphere. It generates storms, lightning, cyclonic and frontal systems. Huge thunderhead clouds, snow, ice, energy. Global warming means extreme weather, both colder and hotter, but overall globally, it's warmer. Storms are stormier. That's what's happening. It's ironic that our cold states have been lashed by cyclonic rain at unprecedented levels while the southern states are burning. All this on top of the heaviest deforestation on the planet, Australia. And the same has happened in the United States, where Trump, that doyen of capitalism, is in denial. Globally, the Earth has lost two-thirds of its forests since 1700. Droughts and flooding rains? No, think desertification and inundation. What can we do, you and I? There's plenty we can do, even if it's only in small ways. We can measure our ecological footprint. Have you done yours? Have you ever really seriously thought about doing an ecological footprint? There's plenty of guidance on the web. A simple search on your browser will provide ways for you to measure your impact. Then tell your story to children, parents, others, so that they can do the same. Another thing that you can do, Jenny Warner needs help at Shady Grove in caring for our native bushland reserve and cemetery. She'll train you up to recognise a weed as distinct from an indigenous plant. It will also awaken you spiritually to the dwindling obliqua forest, which is suffering badly under global warming, and many of those trees are dying at Shady Grove. What can we all do to reduce our waste? Craig Rucastle, who's watched the series War on Waste, if you haven't, it's worth opening up iView to have a look at it. He's amazing. With charm, good humour, assertiveness, but with hope, we consumers can reduce our waste, thereby reducing our ecological footprint immediately. Browse your local council website to assess how well you know what waste goes into which bin, landfill, recyclable, or green waste. There's the link to the Easy Paynham Norwood St Peter's online guide. It will be good for other councils too. Don't chuck your waste in the wrong bin. Just Google Guide to Recycling Waste and it'll tell you. We can also use social media. Many of us do. And we can connect with ecologically responsible organisations such as the Australian Marine Conservation Society, or indeed the Wilderness Society is a very respected one. If you want to become very politically active on environmental issues, there's always GetUp. Social media, of course, bit of a cautionary tale here. Social media has the power to unite, but also to divide us. Algorithms can be written purposely to polarise people, communities and nations, and even manipulate election outcomes. So we've got the work cut out for us. We're not about to fly off to colonise a new planetary system anytime soon. You think about it. Certainly not in sufficient numbers to ensure a sustainable gene pool. Mars is hopeless. It can't support life at the moment. Our best bet is to stay with Earth and to direct our resources into repairing it and doing something about our population in responsible ways. Our nearest exoplanet that might be inhabitable is 4.3 light years away. I think we'll need to harness the energy of dark matter in order to achieve something close to the 300,000 kilometres per second needed to take 4.3 years to get there. It's not going to happen. It's just in part of American fiction, supported by the movies, to show it's okay, we'll fly off one day when we've stuffed this planet up. Sapiens' only hope is here on Earth and for generational change to be made by our children and their children and their children's children. That's assuming, of course, we don't get taken out by a supersized asteroid, which is why we have the moon. An asteroid came and knocked a bit off, and that's the moon. So which do you choose, the blue one or the dead one? It's up to you. To choose the blue option, we need a super powerful myth, a mega myth, for the age of planetary restoration, which is about to challenge us, and we need to depopulate. Otherwise, the insects really will inherit the Earth, although I read the other day that our insects even are dying. Ideally, my dream is of a global political revolution, expressed nationally, peaceful of course, that mandates environmental sustainability. Humanity sadly lacks the foresight to avoid catastrophe. Our myopia is due to greed. Think of the 3-year election cycle and the power of an executive who refuses to move on climate change. What of the future? Harari predicts the following scenario. He says, in 300 years, Homo sapiens will not be the dominant life form on Earth, if we exist at all. Given the current pace of technological development, it's possible we destroy ourselves in some ecological or nuclear calamity. The more likely possibility is that we will use bioengineering and machine learning and artificial intelligence, either to upgrade ourselves into a totally different kind of being, or to create a totally different kind of being that will take us over. As just one Unitarian, I believe that he's wrong on this. Perhaps it's the lingering Christian in me. You can't really get rid of it. It's part of me. For the following reasons, it's only been too human, too unsapiens, to have judged others' differences to be deficits. These conflicts linger on, only to fester into new conflicts, and war begets war in a never-ending cycle of misery. The Darwinist in me recognises that adversity sharpens us up. It drives research in science, medicine and innovation. It's maximised our power and wealth through empire building and colonial expansion. We're just a nuclear trigger away from mad, mutually assured destruction. Our own worst enemy is not artificial intelligence, but within us, sapiens, and its greed. Faced with the threat from artificial intelligence, we have one quality that artificial intelligence will never emulate, and it's what we still have in our favour, the power of the myth through which we share our hopes, ideas, theories, and dreams, our capacity to wonder, to feel awe, to imagine, to create, and to love, the essence of our human spirituality, the means by which we become fully human. I think we face the huge problem of political inertia and apathy. against changing anything. It could be the death by slow degrees, like the oft-quoted frog in the boiling water myth. This claims that frogs cannot sense a slow change in the temperature of water around them. If you plunge them into boiling water, they'll immediately jump out. But if you place them in room temperature water and slowly heat it to boiling, the frog won't notice and will slowly cook to death. Death by degrees. Just imagine what these events are going to do to our household insurance. Are we going to be able to afford in the future to insure our houses? It's going to take a global effort to turn things around, and I suspect that you and I will try to change our consumer habits, reduce our ecological footprint, and use our vote at the ballot box to show whoever wins government that environment matters more than anything else. The closing words, and I'll end with this Native American prophecy. When the earth is ravaged and the animals are dying, a new tribe of people shall come unto the earth, from many colours, classes, creeds, and who by their actions and deeds shall make the earth green again. And they will be known as the Warriors of the Rainbow. Are you going to join them? Amen. To be a rainbow warrior is not a title given, it's a personal choice made between your divine heart, the mind and spirit, free of the idols of materialism. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.